Several people I've interviewed have mentioned, just in passing, in the course of their own conversations, the sort of, and this is my interpretation, but the central role that the restaurant, the Gay Paris, Diego's, you know, Severance, this restaurant has played in a sort of the social life of this, of at least of South Burnaby here.
I would think that's accurate.
You know, they all met here, they would all come here.
I would think that's a fair, here. Yeah. Over the years, I think, and particularly Rod, in the Gay Paris years and the early in the Severance years, I think with our changing society today, and I don't mean this in any derogatory sense, but it wasn't. When they've mentioned that to you, it's certainly everything happened. We went to thousands and thousands of wedding receptions because we weren't a restaurant in those days. As I said earlier, it wasn't until 1975, 76 that we became a restaurant. Because it was all private, and you got to remember there was no Villa Hotel. There was no the Astor came in the late 40s, early 50s, and that was our first, you know, I would imagine that was probably one of the first hotels of any quality banquet facilities, and they were excellent in the early days. Excellent. We're really, I think, probably one of the better hotel and food service operations in the early days when Max Ammon was there. Then yes, we certainly had the room, the configuration we added on in 54, and then we added one in 62, and so and Jack Wasserman, when he was around and doing his column all the time, he used to call it the Wedding Factory, and he did a lengthy articles. We've had many articles done on our wedding days, and you'll walk around Burnaby and Westminster in this area, and you wouldn't have to go very far that somebody's had their family, somebody, there's been some connection with this place, mm-hmm. in the wedding reception business particularly. Mm-hmm. We would often have 5 and 6 wedding reception per day on a Saturday, because mm-hmm. you'd have your afternoon receptions, and then you'd have your 4 at night, and I think we had 7 one day was the most, but we did that quite often actually. Mm-hmm. You're booking a year or so, and so I think we did a quick look. I kept all my pictures at home and that, but I think we did something like, somebody estimated, I think it was Jack Wasserman, estimated 4,000 or 5,000 wedding receptions over a 15 or 20 year period.
So you have a lot of photographs.
Oh, I have a lot of photographs. Yeah, I have a lot of photographs. And the really, really disarming thing about that, Rod, I look at those early 50s. I got married in 1950. I met my wife here, by the way, Pauline, and she came to work part-time, and it was 1948, and we got married in 1950, so our 40th anniversary is coming up. But I look at those pictures, and what's really upsetting about them, I have aged.
Oh, is that right?
I think I have.
Not by much, probably.
Well, you're so kind.
I was going to say, mind you, that doesn't say a lot for how you look when you were 20.
Well, let's be honest.
Yeah, right.
This is supposed to be a candid interview, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Yeah. One of the people mentioned to me at one time, apparently, I guess when it was the Gay Paris, I think, that that you weren't allowed to, the people used to have to bring their own drinks.
Oh, yeah.
And they had
the Liquor Act, there was a major liquor commission hearing in 1954. It was called the Morrill Commission, Judge Morrill. And anyway, in the early days of the cabaret, and again, I don't want to point for the benefit of your tape, but just for your own information, the original part, we're sitting in a part of the building that was put on in 1962, but over through that window through there, through you can see the far side,
right.
On the Kingsway, the south end of the building on the other side, was the actual entrance to the Gay Paris,
mm-hmm.
and the bandstand was, and you probably can see it better than I can, but around the corner and down the side,
mm-hmm.
that's where the bandstand was, my brother Rudy and Rennie, and we'd have a check room attendant, when the police would come in to check the bottles, they would hit a buzzer and a little light would go on underneath the bandstand. You know how the musicians put their music, the score? The deal was, and everyone knew it in those days, you never claimed ownership of your bottle. And if this was your bottle, you made sure it was under the table, but if the chap happened to come along was overzealous and all that was ever on the table, there were no, it was all done by bottles of mix, and we had these little ice buckets, and of course if a chap would come along with the constabulary, They'd say, whose ball is it? I don't know. We were sitting here, and it was here we got here. But in fact, Rod, underneath the table, there were little drawers. And I think we had one of those tables around here for ages. But we actually built little shelves where you could throw a bottle under there, and you'd take it, and you'd pour it under the table. And the Liquor Act, there was no liquor by the glass in British Columbia until after the Morrow Commission report was implemented. Mm-hmm. And then it was very... There were private clubs. I don't want to mislead people on that. But for all intent purposes, there was no liquor by the glass. Mm-hmm. And it was a really revolutionary thing. I mean, they were going to hell in a handbasket because of this. I think it was the same time that they wouldn't allow margarine to be colored because that was competition to butter. Mm-hmm. And a cabinet minister in the early W.A.C. Bennett days was Tilly Ralston, and she would vary the typical political compromise. They put a little sachet of yellow food coloring in the margarine container, and that was the same time we were going through our liquor wars.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was quite something. So things have changed. I don't know whether for the better, but there was an era. Mm. But yes, there was no banquets, and it was all corkage. They used to call it corkage. You'd come in and you'd buy a bucket of ice. And places like clubs like the Arctic Club, the Cave, the Palomar in Vancouver were very well known. There was a great nightclub on the North Shore, and the one in Chinatown. But anyway, the Narrow Supper Club in North Vancouver. But people like Barney Potts played there, and Pat Truesdale, Trudell, I'm sorry. But they're great early entertainers. But they would play these clubs, and there was no recorded music and trios and quartets. Arnie Moeller, just great entertainers. But yes, liquor was strictly bought, and if you were wise, and of course drinking driving wasn't a problem. We didn't have the number of people. Mm. Not suggesting there weren't accidents, but the society had changed dramatically. But you would see a person, the girl would put their, or the little Mickeys, or they would use their little perfume containers to put liquor in, and oh. Yeah.
So when they punched the button at the door and it lit up on the band, did they play a certain tune?
That's right, How Dry I Am.
Oh, yeah.
Then later years, of course, I don't want to date the song, but the party's over type of thing. Any song that was the signature, and so the party's over, or All Lang Syne was played quite often, and of course, boom, boom, there would be a flurry of activity as the cat running after the mouse. I honestly don't recall, Rod, anybody ever being charged. I could stand corrected on that. I don't think it was a much different, it was a much softer society. It really was. Mm-hmm. And yes, there was the liquor laws and they had to carry it out, but it wasn't really the consist. It was not the social problem, and I'm not suggesting there weren't alcoholics, of course there were. But there were not many places to go either. There was a place down on Marine Drive, oh dear, I got a mental block on it right now, but Town and Country on Canada Way, and you know, the old Lougheed Highway, and there were only a handful of clubs around the area. There wasn't.
There was one mentioned to me, the Coconut Grove.
Coconut Grove was one, that's correct.
That was
Larry Hansen, a chap who was a member of the RCMP, he got out of the BC Police RCMP and he formed that club, Larry Hansen, yeah.
What years would that have been?
That was the early 50s again, I think they were actually running at the time in the early 50s, I got married in 1950, and I remember going to Larry's place on Canada Way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Town and Country, where was that?
That was over by just about where BCIT is, in that general area, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in that strip. There was two or three
clubs. A little bit down from Coconut Grove.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Was there any other kind of clubs over in North Burnaby that you remember?
Do you know, I don't think there was.
Mm.
I think Lougheed Highway was there probably might have been a private club, or a Legion, certainly. I don't recall any private clubs, to be honest. No, clubs as we're calling them, they were just business licenses. We used to pay used to be an amusement tax. We used to have to pay on all our cover charges and all our dinners, Social Securities and Municipal Aid Tax was called, the WAC, and part of it, the sales tax, and that tax went to the province of British Columbia, and we used to pay an entertainment tax for every function we had, and we'd have to fill these forms out all the time. Yeah.
Make sure you pay the tax.
Yeah. See, sales tax didn't come in until the 50s, I guess, early 50s, first sales tax.